Hello and welcome to the No Ceilings NBA Draft Show. Today on the show, Albert and I are going to throw it back to our very first draft cycle together, have some fun during the offseason for a 2021 NBA Draft redraft that is coming up next. Hello and welcome to the No Ceilings NBA Draft Show. My name is Corey Tulliba. I am here, as always, with my co-host, Albert Garbage Time Gim. Albert, my man, how you doing today?
Living the dream. Really excited. I'm happy to be back here. I'm pumped for this pod, Corey, because I feel like we're going to have a lot of fun just going back in time. I'm trying to remember like where I was at mentally in 2021, where I was at physically in 2021. But I'm ready. I'm the best version of me right now. So I'm ready to rock. I'm excited. yeah, that's where I'm at. That's how I'm doing.
I think I personally was in much better shape in 2021, but we're going to get back there, back soon. But yeah, I'm really excited, man, because, I think my first, our first draft cycle where we interacted was for 2020. You know, it was a long, arduous draft. That's where we met. We weren't working together yet. You had just invited me on to your podcast to talk draft. And, we shared a lot of similar sentiments about prospects, and we had a good vibe. And so the next year we decided to join forces on what was then the Draft Act before No Ceilings, a year before, I think, No Ceilings came to be. Yeah. And we had a lot of fun that cycle. It was a cycle where we started it late, that was a really interesting class, a lot of talent, atop of that class, a lot of interesting dialogue, with Jalen Green and Mobley and Cade, some really fun stuff. And I think obviously the way these redrafts go, a lot of the guys that I think we're going to talk about today weren't really mentioned all that much as far as like the top prospects. So it's fun to look back and see what works and what didn't, and where, evaluations went wrong, or where they went right, because I have, I think a pretty awesome hit, in this class that I'm proud of. And then there are guys who I'm like, I definitely had those guys too high, and I don't think I would have had them that high, if this draft were to happen, nowadays. So I'm excited for it, man.
Yeah, Corey. I mean, we were learning each other for this draft class, right? We were learning how we wanted to talk about prospects. We were just feeling stuff out. And I think we came up, I think this was a really interesting class that we kind of embarked upon with our journey together as a pair, as a duo, as a tandem. Why do I need to say that in three different ways? I apologize. But I'm so excited to talk about this class because there are a lot of really interesting guys, and guys that even now, Corey, are still developing. That we still don't know what their final form is going to look like. And some guys who have maybe had slower starts to their careers that we're still excited about. So I'm ready to rock, Corey. I think we're going to have a lot of fun today.
All right. I'm going to give you the first pick of the draft. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to give you the first pick. The Detroit Pistons are on the clock. Who, Mr. Gim, are you selecting with the first overall pick?
Yeah, after much deliberation between a couple of prospects, we've decided on Santi Aldama. No, just kidding. no, this one's an easy one for me, Corey. At the time, we both loved him. I still love him. I remember it was like after his rookie season, we were doing a pod, and I was telling you how like I did a deep dive in like his passing, and I love Cade Cunningham. And I've loved Cade Cunningham. I believed even when he was injured and he didn't have, you know, the start to his career that a lot of people thought he was going to have. And people were wondering, like, oh, is he a bust as a number one pick? Like, is he ever going to reach that ceiling? Blah, blah, blah. I never, ever sold my stock on Cade Cunningham. I always believed that he was going to figure it out one day, that he was going to be the version of him that we saw this past season. And more importantly, Corey, the reason why I'm so pumped about this pick is because he has not reached his final form. He's not a complete prospect yet. There's still room for him to grow. I still can't wait to look to see what he looks like when he's 27, 28, 29. Like, those years are going to be so exciting for me, where he might be a top five guy in the NBA by then. And so the Detroit Pistons are going to select Cade Cunningham in this redraft and feel absolutely amazing about it.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be psyched about the leap that he took last season when, surprise, surprise, he finally had complementary talent around him, right? Like, real veterans and not a bunch of guys who can't shoot and are clogging, you know, the entire interior for him to operate. This is a guy who's so good at getting to those spots at the elbow where he can pick you apart and then make, you know, really impressive reads. Right. So, you know, I think this decision, you know, for a lot of people, maybe they lean a different way. But I think when you're swinging at the top of the draft and for the number one pick, I think it's completely reasonable to go, you know what? I know what an Evan Mobley, I know what a Franz Wagner, I know what they might bring. But I think that Cade can be the number one option on a championship level team or on a contending team in a way that I'm not sure about the other guys. I think that's a fair assessment. So completely reasonable, I think, to just keep it chalk and go with Cade, who was a super hyped up prospect. I think I probably thought he was a little bit taller. Around draft time, I thought he was one of these 6'8 jumbo guys and not like a 6'5, 6'6 guy. And that's why I think, you know, we see how much the draft is evolving and now we get official measurements and not just hearsay and how that might affect our evaluations. But Cade was phenomenal last season, you know, got his first taste of playoff success. And I think he's going to continue to take, you know, another step this upcoming season.
No, I love that, Corey. I just feel like, yeah, that next the next step and the step after that and the step after that, I feel like, are coming. And yeah, after his breakout season this past season, you start to dream. And to your point, he's a 1A guy, guy that you can really dream about building a contender, an NBA championship winning contender around. And so just to see what Detroit has done this offseason, bringing in guys, right? Bringing in a Duncan Robinson, right? Bringing in these guys that they feel like can really accentuate his strengths, right? And then they get Jaden Ivey back this season from injury. And I think Jaden Ivey's going to be a really nice partner for him to take some of that ball handling responsibility out of his hands and where Cade doesn't feel like he has to have the ball all the time. He can take a little break. You know, he can spot up, he can space the floor, he can do different things on the floor, that you even do like a small pick and roll with those two. There are different options that open up for him. So I'm through the roof on him. Can't wait to see what this next season looks like, the next five seasons look like. Love it. Wouldn't change anything. Really pumped about it.
All right, so that means I'm on the clock now. The Houston Rockets selected Jalen Green. I'm going to go in a different direction. I'm going to go with Evan Mobley. I'm going to take, I know, you know, there were rumors that Evan Mobley didn't want to go to Houston at that time. I am going to take him anyway, much like the Utah Jazz took Ace Bailey this year. I'm going to take Evan Mobley anyway. You know, really, really pumped about how impactful he was this past season. You know, I think just the impact that he has defensively, like, he really has the ability to anchor any defense in the league. And the offensive skills, I mean, we loved the idea of what he could be and the flashes that he showed, the passing. You know, he's such a good passer and playmaker. His feel is so high. You know, I want to see him continue to take leaps as, you know, an aggressive scorer and driver with those long strides. But I think that he did take that kind of offensive leap this past season. I think he has even more of a leap to take coming up in this next year. You know, he doubled his 3-point volume last year, really more than doubled it. And if he can even increase that a little bit, you know, maybe become a little bit better as a free throw shooter, but you know, 18.5 points per game, 9 rebounds, 3 assists, you know, with his defense, he's really turning into the player that we envisioned him being. And, I think that what he offers as a two-way player, yeah, he's a no-brainer building block for any organization. And, you know, imagine, you know, and who knows what it all looks like and how it plays out with the butterfly effect, but imagine you put that dude in Houston with that defense, mm-hmm, him and Amen and Tari Eason, and it would rock. It would straight up rock. So he's my pick at number two for Houston.
It's a great pick, Corey. I like the point that you made about him or everyone in this class not being at Cade's level as a 1A. And so you're really looking at like a 1B or second guy. And I think of those options, Mobley's the right choice because of exactly what you talked about. The versatility that he brings you as a defender with the sheer size and length and mobility that he has as well. And then on the offensive side of the ball, like even during that draft when we did the scouting report on him, I think we did a pod with Metcalf and we did. We barely knew him. I didn't know what he looked like. As soon as he came up on the screen, I hated him. all kidding aside, I remember in that pod, something that we talked about extensively was Mobley's passing ability. We talked about how intricate of a passer he was, how nuanced that aspect of his game was, and how he's a guy that can really, as a guy who can like be a screener doing dribble handoffs with a guy like that, just like it opens you up to different possibilities. Even a guy like him, like catching in the short roll and doing a little bit creating time to time, was kind of where we were at mentally with Mobley. And like to see his growth in the NBA and how he's gotten more confident, I think, as an offensive player, both with handling the ball, shooting it from outside, as you mentioned, with increased volume. A lot to like. A lot to like. And ultimately, if he's going to be that strong of a positive on the defensive side of the ball, then obviously it makes sense to grab a guy like that, because it's hard to find 7-footers that can move like him and be that impactful on the defensive side of the ball while also bringing a ton of versatility on the offensive side of the ball as well. So great pick. I think it has to be him.
Okay. You're back on the clock. Cleveland Cavaliers, pick 3. They originally took Evan Mobley, but he's off the board. What direction are you headed in?
Yeah, so for me, Corey, this one was a little bit harder for me than I thought it would be. And it's not because, like, I don't know, just because for me, it's contextual too. Like, Cleveland obviously had in mind, like, they wanted a big with this pick. They wanted somebody who can kind of anchor the back line for them, do that type of stuff. Now, the guy that I'm going to take here isn't like Evan Mobley, but he is a big. And I think the idea with him going here, and I don't know, people may not like this pick that I'm going to make here, but I'm okay with it because I still think he's going to be a really, really great player. He's showing some of it this summer playing for his country. I'm going with Alperen Şengün here.
Okay.
With the third,
I think the chat, I think the live chat on YouTube is going to appreciate that. Brian K, Generational Hater. You know, they were sent, Generational Hater said, I'm taking Şengün over Mobley easily.
Oh, okay.
So we got some Şengün fans in the building right now. If you're watching live, make sure that you, you know, you hit the like button, the follow, the share, all that, you know how we do here. So yeah. All right. Talk to me about Şengün, man.
All right. Plot twist. Cause I was not expecting that. I actually thought I was going to get hate for it. I like Şengün here because, Corey, he's a guy that, hey, we loved him heading into that draft, Corey. We were huge on Şengün. If you go back and listen to the pod, when we talked about him, we were like, dude, this guy rocks. And, he rocks. We were right. He's really, really good. I saw a clip today. He made some pass in Eurobasket. I was just like, nah, dude, what are we watching? Some like dribble behind the head pass, interior pass. I was like, fantastic. The thing with Şengün that I love is he's such a weirdo. and Corey, like, we like weirdos, guy who offensively can do so much for you. And like maybe the shooting hasn't, you know, come around where we, you know, I don't even remember where we felt like with his shooting, his outside shooting, if he was ever going to be an outside shooter.
I think we were like optimistic that maybe he could get there. We weren't like, it's gonna, like, he's not gonna take him. He doesn't have any pass. I think we were like, we hope.
Yeah. But overall, like, he's been really, really good. And if you look at just, even if you just look at the counting stats, last season, 19.1 points per game, 10.3 rebounds, 4.9 assists. And that was like such a huge part of his scout for us, where we were like, this guy is a special passer. Yeah. Like, the passing ability on this guy is electric. Like, we were so excited about it. He was just named an all-star this past season. And like, it's just, for me, it's like Cleveland takes him and then he's like their anchor as their big for the future, right? Obviously, he's not the defender that Mobley is, but as an offensive co-engine, there's so much to like with Şengün. And I think what he's doing at his size, the versatility, the vision, the nuance, the screening, like, it's just, there's a lot to like with Şengün. And so for me, once again, I thought I was going to get hate for this pick, but I love it here because I think he offers so much for you offensively that it's like hard to pass, especially when we're looking at an NBA where offense is so important. Just really quickly before I turn it over to you, Corey, his advanced stats too.
Yeah.
In his rookie season till now, assist percentage, 19.1, 21, 25.2, 24.1. I'm like, come on, dude. Strong rebounder as well. Just a guy that has so much to offer, low post scorer, a lot to like. He's my pick here. I feel great about it. I feel like Cleveland would have a lot of fun with him as well. And then just imagine him with like Donovan Mitchell and who am I thinking of? Garland, like, so much fun. So I'm going Şengün.
Lonzo Ball
now.
New Cav. I love it. We referred to Şengün as an outlier in that class because of that playmaking ability and all of the skill that he had displayed and, you know, winning the MVP in the Turkish League. Okay, I am on the clock for the Toronto Raptors, who initially took Scottie Barnes. I'm going to pivot and I'm going to take Franz Wagner, who, if you go back to our pod back then, we both loved, but I think that we underrated. And I think there is a legitimate case that you could say that Franz should have been the number one pick in a redraft. You could make that case. I think, you know, looking at some of the catch-all advanced metrics, EPM, etc., like, you could be like, hey, this is the guy. And then you go and you just look at his raw stats. You know, this is not just an advanced stat darling. Last year, 24 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists to 2.3 turnovers, shot 87% at the line. You know, the 3-point shooting has not come around yet. You know, back-to-back years, sub 30. If he gets to 35% as a 3-point shooter, and he's shooting them at volume. He's been shooting at volume his entire career. If he gets a 35, 36%, he gets back to where he was his first 2 years in the league, playing with the volume that he has. I don't know what his ceiling is. Mm. That is, I mean, dude, I don't think people realize that he's scoring at the volume that he is. You know, 24 points on 19 shots. So he's shooting a lot, right? But like, we might be looking at it at a legit number one option scorer, you know. And now they're going to be questions about how that translates to the playoffs. You know, Franz has, you know, had some struggles, but when you throw in the two-way versatility, you throw in the positional versatility, Franz is a bad dude. And he's I think continues to get underrated because it feels like he's playing in the shadow of Paolo.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's fair.
My brain is trying to go back to 2021. It was a very different time in my life, Corey. I was like, even work-wise, I was going through a lot. But I do remember us distinctly being very high on Franz. Both of us, I think that was the first time in my life I put together like an actual big board I remember having Franz at like 13 or 12 or something like that. And even then I was like hesitant. I was like, oh, this feels a little bit too high, but I really like the player. We really liked the film. When we did our podcast on him, if you go back and listen to it, I'm sure it's somewhere on the internet. Like, we had so many great things to say about his game. Even then, Corey, I don't think we could have imagined the career that he's had so far. Yeah. And you know, Corey, you mentioned how he's kind of slept on right now. I think also part of it is people overinflate the shooting struggles. And what I mean by that is, yeah, it's clear he's not a lights out outside shooter. And that has become, I don't even see it as a concern for me, because I think it's just another area of improvement. And he's still young enough where he can continue to grow in that aspect of his game. Look at LeBron. Took him a while to become a reliable outside shooter, right? And Franz is only in year five now of his career. So I still have a lot of optimism about what type of outside shooter he might become. But ultimately, if you talk about his strengths, and you've talked about it, you've touched on it already, Corey, he's such a badass when he's getting downhill, right? Like, his ability to get to the basket and do it in so many different ways, his ability to find good angles to the basket, his ability to use his strength and his long strides and his savvy to get to the rim. And he has different types of touch that he can use around the basket as well. Just a really intriguing offensive player that, you know, you look at him, he's not like a super athlete, but he just knows how to get to, and a lot of these Euro guys are kind of like that. There's something about their game and the way that they grow up playing that they have very kind of like off balance, off tempo ways of getting to the rim, and so getting to their spots. And I think Franz is one of those guys as well. And so in a redraft like this, is Franz is going, you draft him at four, right, to Toronto. Yeah. That's a really interesting landing spot for him, right? And what his career could look like if he ended up in Toronto, because he's not too far off in terms of the types of guys that they like over there, right? Yeah. So I think that's a really interesting pick, and I love it a lot, because I'm a big Franz fan as well.
Yeah. Good at basketball. All right. Ooh. At pick five, Orlando is now on the clock. They originally took Jalen Suggs with their fifth pick, even though Franz Wagner ended up with them later on in that draft. But you are on the clock. Franz is not on the clock, or not on the board. Who are you taking at number five?
He was a guy in that draft, Corey, that came on a little bit later in the process. But in my mind, is the perfect pick for this roster. I'm even surprised. No, I'm not surprised, because they took a guy that they like, and they still like him a lot. But I imagine, like, if Orlando were doing the redraft right now, they would be very intrigued about taking the guy that I'm thinking, because he offers a ton of that length. He offers shooting that they've been desperately wanting for some time. Athleticism, growth. He was a little bit older at the time that he got drafted. And I know by now our listeners know who I'm talking about. And maybe some of you guys think it's too high, but I think you're absolutely crazy considering the type of player he's shown to be in the NBA and what he can be even now. My guy's Trey Murphy.
Okay.
Trey Murphy, some people might say it's high. I get it. Guys like Scottie Barnes are still on the board. Josh Giddey, Jalen Suggs. I totally understand. But if you think about the Orlando Magic and the type of players that they like length, they like size. What have they needed for some time? Dead-eye shooting. You get all of that in a guy, Trey Murphy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're winning. Mm-hmm. You're winning. He would have been an absolute electric pick for the Orlando Magic. Now, Jalen Suggs has been great as well. I totally understand the value that he brings to that team. And also what they were thinking at the time, they were thinking he could have been like their point guard of the future, right? Obviously, he's probably not that, but very valuable still, Jalen Suggs. But you get a guy like Trey Murphy and the type of player that he's turned into, it's terrifying what he would look like on that roster. Imagine Trey. Now, I still love the duo of Franz and Paolo, but just imagine if Trey Murphy was next to Paolo. What that would look like.
The spacing that he would provide.
The spacing he would provide. The size and length on defense. Just, I think he's the home run pick here. And once again, I get it. You have some really intriguing guys like Scottie Barnes still on the board. Josh Giddey, Kuminga. I totally understand. But considering the context and what they've needed for forever, I feel like Trey Murphy's the right pick here.
I love it. We loved Trey Murphy. We were hammering it. We're like, talking all the Zaire Williams hype in the top 10. We're like, no, what about Trey Murphy? Like, why not just get that guy who we know has, you know, a real skill set that is going to translate. I love the fit with Paolo theoretically in that front court, the size, the length, the expanding game. You know, it's, I hope that New Orleans has a more steady year this year. I hope Zion is healthy. I hope that, you know, they just serve as a functional team and we don't look back at, you know, their decision to trade up for Derek Queen and how that ultimately plays out with their draft pick. But I hope that they have a real healthy season, and Herb Jones and Zion and Trey Murphy can all take another step together. Because Trey is somebody, I love his game. So I'm on the clock now for the Oklahoma City Thunder. We were in the building when they took Josh Giddey, which was a shock. It got an audible gasp from the Barclays Center crowd. I'm going to go in a different direction, and I'm going to go with somebody who went undrafted in the 2021 NBA draft. Maybe some people will feel it's a little bit early. I'm going to go with Austin Reeves. And I love the fit of Austin Reeves within that Oklahoma City offense that is multi-ball handler, just coming at you aggressive. Austin Reeves has been a guy who has played well in playoffs. I am going with Austin Reeves and righting the wrong of having him go undrafted.
It's a great pick, Corey. I don't even have too much to add. Just it's exciting to think about him on that roster that they have now, what he could have been either as a starter or a guy off the bench. Love the pick. Love the fit. Makes a lot of sense.
All right. The Golden State Warriors are now on the clock. They took Jonathan Kuminga, passed on Franz Wagner on draft night, somebody who everybody was like, oh, Franz is so safe. Like, he'd fit in their system. Just take that guy. They swung for the upside, as teams often do at the top of the draft. You were on the board. There's a lot of upside plays still on the board. And there are some more solid guys on the board. So, Golden State, pick 7. Albert Gim is on the clock.
Wow. So this is a tough one. I just want to add some context for our viewers out there who are kind of following along. Scottie Barnes still on the board.
Yes.
Jalen Suggs still on the board. Jalen Green still on the board. Mm-hmm. I'm not Jonathan Kuminga still on the board. I'm not going to take any of those guys. And I get it. Some of y'all are going to be like, you're out of your mind. What the hell are you thinking? Back in 2021, this is a guy that I did not like. Mm-hmm. A guy that I did not like at all because I thought that he was being overhyped. I thought people were talking about him as if he was going to be like a number one option, that they were treating him with like star potential. A guy we had Nathan on our pod back then, and he was gave us like weird energy, was like, hey, like, you know, are you seeing things the way I'm seeing things? I'll never forgive you, Nathan. The guy I'm picking here, easy choice for me. Maybe not easy. Let me relax. But I think it would be really interesting with this roster. Jalen Johnson out of Duke.
Okay.
Is my pick here. Back then, I just wasn't a fan. I felt like he didn't really know what he's doing on the floor. I felt like he was being pushed all around the internet as this guy that was going to be like a future number one option. I didn't like that narrative. And I was kind of thinking that he felt that way. But then to watch how his NBA career has blossomed and to see how he's playing in Atlanta, playing next to a Trey Young, it gets you thinking, right? In terms of what that would look like in the Golden State Warriors ecosystem. The type of player that he can be under the tutelage of a Draymond Green, a Kevon Looney, the type of player he would be right now, the type of versatility he can offer you on the offensive side of the ball. Imagine Jalen Johnson being the dribble handoff guy for Steph Curry, you know, being on the floor as they're running all that split action stuff in that chaos, what he could offer, right? Jalen Johnson is my pick because I feel like, although I get it with Scottie Barnes, I get it with these other guys, I just feel like Jalen Johnson in that ecosystem could be even better than what we're seeing right now with him in Atlanta. And I really, really like what I've seen so far from him in Atlanta, which I didn't expect to feel. But I'm just, the context with the player, the fit, everything is so exciting. I had to go with Jalen Johnson.
I love it. And I think that's a really interesting fit for all the reasons you stated. Yeah, Jalen Johnson was an interesting evaluation back then. You know, he came out of the gates. I think he had like a monster game where he like completely filled out the box score. And I don't know who Duke played. I don't remember who they played in that game. You know, it could have been some low major program that they just beat up on. But then there was like the weird narrative of he left the team. And, you know, it was just like there was that wild card for it. But the tools were there, right? Like you could see the passing flashes and the finishing, and you know, the shot wasn't super pretty, still isn't, but good enough, right? It's certainly not a number one type option, but just as a complementary kind of fill in the gaps, modern forward who could slide up and down the positional spectrum, you know, always super interesting and was a high level prospect. So it's no surprise. But seeing him in that Golden State system where he could do a lot of the things that Kuminga, you know, they kind of wanted Jonathan Kuminga to do, but also maybe has shown a little bit more feel and ability to kind of fit in and not just be like, I got to go score and, you know, want to do that, makes a really interesting situation for them. And you, I mean, they won a championship since drafting Kuminga, but it makes you think of what that would have done for their ceiling if they had drafted a player like that. If this is how the board fell, obviously they could have taken, you know, a number of guys in the real draft over Kuminga, but really interesting pick. And that leaves me with the Orlando Magic back on the clock for pick two. You took Trey Murphy for them the first time around, and now I'm in a little bit of a predicament, but I think I'm just going to go with my gut and I'm going to take Jalen Suggs. You know, so Jalen Suggs is still going to end up in Orlando. I mean, we know what Jalen Suggs does on the basketball court when he is healthy. You know, his big thing is, can he, you know, consistently play games? He's been dealt with a lot of injuries through his career, only played 35 games last year. But the year before, it looked like he was really taking a turn. You know, he shot 39.7% on 5 threes a game. The year prior, that was on 75 games. You know, he was more efficient. He was getting it done defensively as a two-way player. You know, we know that he's not necessarily like your natural point guard, but he has that really slick point, like you know, vision that he's got from playing quarterback in high school. He brings winning intangibles. He plays so hard. He's athletic. You know, I still love Jalen Suggs as a prospect. I felt like he was off to a good start. Then he kind of cooled off a little bit. If that shot really comes around, it obviously opens up a lot of things. And, you know, maybe there's still an outcome if he can get healthy and consistent where he could be that Drew Holiday kind of player. And so I'm still taking Jalen Suggs here. He slides a little bit from his original draft slot, but we already know what that fit looks like on this Magic team. And I think that this feels right to me, for him.
Love it. I mean, the defensive possibilities with that roster with Trey Murphy and him, terrifying, terrifying stuff. So love it.
And here's where, you know, the board continued to get crazy on draft night. A guy that we were super high on, you know, we could pat ourselves on the back and say we were really into Trey Murphy. We were really into Şengün. We loved Davion Mitchell, who the Sacramento Kings took on draft night. We didn't love the fit because they had just taken Tyrese Halliburton, De'Aaron Fox, and we were like, this is probably the worst case scenario for fit. And Davion is certainly carving out himself a home in Miami, which I love because I still think he's super impactful. But you are on the board for the Sacramento Kings.
Corey, the slide ends here with this guy. I think it's about time he comes off the board, and I actually like the fit. And this is one of the better butterfly effect sliding doors moments where if he ended up on this team, maybe Halliburton doesn't get traded. Maybe Fox gets traded instead. I don't know. Different things can happen. My pick here is Scotty Barnes.
Yeah.
I think, man, you put Scotty Barnes on that young roster with the Tyrese Haliburton, with the De'Aaron Fox, what he would have offered them, the really weird and interesting things they could have done in ball screens with that trio, I think would have been really interesting, what they could have done there, what he brings on the defensive side of the ball as well. Obviously, being in Sacramento, he would have had a much smaller role offensively than what he's had in Toronto so far, but I think that's kind of a good thing. Yeah. For him, and I think might have, not to say that his career is bad or, you know, going in the wrong direction, I just feel like he might have been a different style of player, which might have even benefited him more than kind of the direction he's going right now. I just feel like the outlook with the Kings would have looked very different if he was a pick here, and so yeah. I think he's the right pick. Just an absolute weirdo situation if he ends up there, what they could have done. I think they would have been so fun and interesting to watch. Also, like, the synergy of, like, personalities too, what that could have looked like with, like, a Haliburton and Barnes together. Like, infectious. I think they would have been, you know what they could have been, Corey? They could have been the early 2000s Clippers if they took Scottie Barnes. Like, he would have been their Lamar Odom, and, you know, like, ripping and running with Q Rich. And, like, I think they would have been some version of that and could have been really fun and might have completely changed their outlook as a franchise. So Scottie Barnes ends his fall here, and he ends up with the 9th pick with the Sacramento Kings.
Okay, I love that. And I think that the fall had to stop there, right? And I think that this is the range for him, if you did a redraft, that he might fall in. Because, you know, he's one of these weird players where, like, he's just been maybe too on the ball. And is that really the role that's going to be best for him, especially with the contract that he has? What's it going to be like to build around that? Is he a true one? Like, the questions that we had up top, right? Those are all things Toronto is going to have to figure out in this new iteration of what they're going to look like now that Masai is no longer running the team with what they had. And Toronto continues, I think, to make decisions that make that Scotty's job harder. So maybe we see a kind of a Cade like renaissance with Scotty when he gets into a context that kind of accentuates his offensive strengths a little bit more. I am on the clock now. Pick 10, Herb Jones is going to Memphis.
Wow.
Memphis took Zaire Williams originally after a really unproductive freshman season. And there were, you know, we're coming out of quarantine COVID situations. You know, Stanford, I think, like, didn't even have their own practice space. You know, there was a lot of things going on, a lot of variables that make it hard to measure. And, you know, Zaire obviously was a highly recruited player. You had to wonder, with where that Memphis team was at that point, if just taking a guy who could fill the gaps around the star players that they had already acquired, what that could have looked like in those years that they were really competitive and competing. And a guy like Herb Jones, who, you know, had shown some really interesting playmaking flashes, obviously is one of the better wing defenders, not only in this class, but in the league. And now you put Herb Jones and Jaren Jackson Jr. together as a defensive tandem. You know, maybe you still have Desmond Bain and Ja there, and you just have this monster starting group. And you have Herb on the books, and you actually get value from this pick and what that could have done for Memphis as contenders. So Herb Jones at number 10, I know he was a little older, and, you know, this is why the draft is an inexact science, and why sometimes, even if it might seem on the surface like it makes more sense to take the risk on the younger player, they don't always develop. And sometimes, like we always say, older players can develop too. And I feel like Herb has continued to get better. Again, New Orleans, you know, where he ended up, is in a didn't have a great season last year. And there's been a lot of chaos in that organization, but Herb has still been really impactful, and yeah, he feels right to bookend this top 10 here.
Yeah. No, Corey. And also, like, he makes sense for that team. Like, yep, you could see them take, like, in a redraft, being very interested in taking him. I totally get it. Yeah, no, really good player, really good fit. I'm happy with it. And it's, you know, there's still some guys left on the board that people are going to be shocked by, but I still get it. Still makes sense to me. So, yeah.
All right. You're on the clock picking for Charlotte. They took James Bouknight out of UConn the first time around, who was a really fun player who just hasn't figured it out. Maybe the way that the game has translated, maybe people would be a little more skeptical of that style of guard over the last couple of years is where the league is trending. But we're in our time machine. So you get to maybe wrong or right, or right or wrong for Charlotte here. Where are you going?
I'm going to go like a similar vibe of player here, but just wondering if like they took him instead, things might have turned out differently for them. Bouknight joined a Hornets team that was super young. LaMelo Ball was in his coming into the second year. Miles Bridges is still young. Who else? They still had Gordon Hayward on that team, just going through their roster right now. And PJ Washington was on that team as well. He was the second pick in that year's draft. Mm. And he's going to fall to 11. And I think it's fair. I know some of our listeners may not agree if you're a big fan of his, but I think he's the right fit here because they were looking for a two guard. They were looking for a guy who could be an offensive-minded player that could, you know, be a good partner to Lonzo, to LaMelo, a guy who can help him with some of the scoring. And I think Jalen Green is a better version of what we saw from James Bouknight. So I take Jalen Green here with the, what am I, 12th pick, right?
12th pick in the draft. That was the 11th pick. Yeah.
11th pick for the Charlotte Hornets. A little bit of a fall, but I think this is a good context for him. Could be a good situation. Maybe things turn out a little bit differently for him in Charlotte, but also maybe similarly, not sure, but ultimately still better than Bouknight. So yeah. Jalen Green's my pick here.
Yeah, I like that pick, you know, and, you know, I think as many people who may be like, oh, Jalen Green really slid, I think there's another contingent of people who are, you know, a lot more advanced stats focused who might actually say it's too early for Jalen Green. I don't feel that way. I think this is a great swing because the draft is still about swinging and Jalen Green's still super young. I think he's 22. You know, like he's going to be younger than some of the guys that we're going to talk about for this upcoming draft class still. And, you know, there's still upside and I'm interested to see what that looks like. I truly am. I, you know, in a new situation, under, you know, the tutelage playing alongside a guy like Devin Booker, you know, maybe there's still another leap, you know, with Jalen Green. He was super talented. He didn't get a college experience. You know, he played with the G League Ignite and even that going back like COVID, they played the G League, played their games in a bubble. You know, and we haven't seen the G League do a terrific job. The G League Ignite system, they didn't do a terrific job of developing the players that they got. They got guys drafted, right? Like they got guys drafted high, but they didn't necessarily do a great job of putting, of getting everybody drafted and then having an impact in the league. But I am still a Jalen Green believer because I think he's a hard worker. He's really talented. He's so athletic. He has the tools. It's just going to be like, can we get him to that next step that a lot of shooting guard prospects take time to get to? Zach LaVine, I think Devin Booker didn't come out of the gates playing, you know, being the player that he was. He had to learn how to be a more nuanced playmaker, you know? So I think there is a trajectory for him that makes him a positive player. And him next to LaMelo in this scenario, I think is really interesting, right? Like LaMelo would get him put into some really interesting spots. So I'm with it. Jalen Green to the Charlotte Hornets, and he still gets to rock out and score. And that would be a really, at the least, exciting and exhilarating backcourt with those two guys. Okay, so I am on the clock for the San Antonio Spurs, who managed to shock the building even more than the Josh Giddey pick did by taking Josh Primo, who did get a lot of kind of late into the process draft hype.
Yeah.
He was getting a lot of hype very late into that process. And so I'm going to swerve. I'm not going to take Josh Primo, who had his off-court issues and, you know, has struggled a little bit. I'm going to take Josh Giddey here instead for San Antonio. And, you know, obviously, if you look at some of the players that they have now outside of Wemby, you know, Stephen Castle, how does that look? Dylan Harper playing next to him. We don't know what, obviously, what that turns into, but I still think Josh Giddey is a good basketball player. And I think that he's probably going to get a fair contract for what he's worth from the Bulls, ultimately, before the season starts. And at the end of the day, he's 6'8". He can get downhill. He can pass the hell out of the ball. And he's a developing shooter who's still, again, super young, probably younger than sometimes we even like to think, because it feels like these guys have been in the league for a while. And, you know, while he was on the Bulls last year and the Bulls were completely mediocre, like, while he didn't get to play on that championship Thunder team, he did get deep playoff runs with that team. And while he had his struggles in the playoffs, a lot of young players do, hopefully he can learn from them. But I think that this is a good spot for Josh Giddey, that coaching staff under the tutelage of Pop back when, you know, he would have been drafted and then ultimately paired with Wemby at some point. I think that that could have been, obviously, anybody being paired with Wemby would have been a really good situation for them, but he would have been able to help develop Devin Vassell and Sohan and all of those kind of guys, I think, get them the ball in their spots. So yeah, San Antonio takes Josh Giddey, the Aussie, at number 12. Albert, you are on the clock for the Indiana Pacers, fresh off a finals appearance this year. Back then, a little bit further away, they took Chris Duarte, who we liked in the draft, really shot the ball, had a good rookie season, tailed off after that. So Indiana, on the clock. Where are you going?
This is a really hard one, Corey. Also, this is going to be my last pick, so I'm trying to trying to really think this one through. I have a couple guys in my mind that I'm looking at right now. It feels wrong to pass on Kuminga here. I feel like I should take him at the spot, but I'm like also thinking about like that Indiana roster. I don't know if I should be looking at it with like the way that it is now or it was back then. Whatever, it's a tough one, but I'm actually going to pass on Kuminga.
So, okay. I think that's fair. I would have passed on him too, okay, to be fair.
This is a weird one because I still don't love him as a player. And I was really disappointed. No, even disappointed isn't right. It's just like I was always lower on him than consensus. And when things didn't work out for him on the Knicks, a lot of people were like really devastated by it. And then he had like a nice little run with the Sixers last season. And even that, I'm not like fully sold on him yet. Yeah. And yet I also believe in him as like, I still think he's a really good defender. I think he's going to be a nice third option, a guy who can competently spread the floor. I don't think he's an elite shooter, although a lot of people characterized him as one, but I still like him here at this pick for the Indiana Pacers, because obviously after this, they went after like an Aaron Nesmith and different guys. And I feel like Quentin Grimes kind of fits that mold. And so I'm going Quentin Grimes here. I think some people might be like, you're crazy for taking him over Kuminga, but I'm just thinking like with the Pacers and the way that they want to play and the way that Grimes is going to defend while also be complimentary on the offensive side of the ball, I think he makes sense with this roster. And once again, I just want to be clear, like as a Knick fan too, like I was always lower on him because I never really believed in the shot. And a lot of like when we drafted him, a lot of fans were like, oh, we've got like this sniper. He's going to be incredible. And I always tried to temper expectations in telling people like he's okay as a shooter. Like don't think that you're getting Reggie Miller here. Or Allen Houston here is probably the more fitting comp. You're not getting Allen Houston here. You're getting a guy who is still growing as an outside shooter and is not super reliable with the ball in his hands, but is way more gritty and competitive on the defensive side than people realize. And so him coming into the Indiana situation, I think could have been interesting with his perimeter defense and then growing as an outside shooter and then growing with the ball in his hands and some of the stuff he can do getting into the lane. So, Quentin Grimes is my final pick for the Indiana Pacers.
No, I think that's a good pick. And I think for a lot of the reasons you touched on, I think saying like they targeted Aaron Nesmith, you know, and that kind of archetype is, you know, an astute point. You know, Quentin Grimes had a weird trajectory, man, because he was like super hyped up in high school, coming into college, had to transfer, and found his way by the time, you know, with the Final Four run and this, you know, he really seems like he found his way. Felt like he went in an appropriate spot in that draft. Even though I don't even know if he was like full on getting projected as a first round pick, you know, but like, don't think it was a reach. You know, he's still like an NBA player when a lot of guys picked in that range are not. And then absolutely went ballistic for the Sixers when that roster really got depleted last year, which I think is not his true role, you know, on a competent team, but he had room to experiment, grow, and he played really well, had some huge offensive games. Can he build on it? Let's see.
Right.
You know, let's see. But I still like Quentin Grimes, and I think he's probably outperformed expectations at the least, right? Okay, so we're just hitting the lottery on this redraft. So this is going to be the last pick. The Warriors are back on the clock. They took Jalen Johnson at number 7 in this redraft with their first pick. And maybe this is a name that is, people are going to be like, oh man, you're passing on Kuminga too for this guy, or you're passing on this guy for this guy. But every time I watched the Oklahoma City Thunder the last couple of years, I'm like, you know who rocks? Aaron Wiggins rocks. Aaron Wiggins is just a really good basketball player. He's always doing good things on the floor. And I think he would be awesome in the Golden State Warriors system too. He's shooting the cover off the ball. I mean, for his career, he's a 39% three-point shooter. You know, it's always been on moderate volume, but this year it was on 4.5 attempts a game. You know, he went from playing 16 minutes to 23 minutes, went from 7 points to 12 points per game. You know, he's a sound decision maker, 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. His advanced numbers are really good, like EPM, you know, real adjusted plus minus, you know, all of, he's just impactful. And maybe there's a little bit of the system and the players he's around and complements perfectly, but I feel like he could do the same thing in Golden State. And I just think he does great stuff on the floor. He's capable of having moments where he goes off. He's cool with fitting in and being complimentary. Good basketball player, and a good basketball player that deserved to be a lottery pick in that draft in hindsight.
Corey, really quickly before we close, if I'm the Warriors in this draft and I walk away with Aaron Wiggins and Jalen Johnson, man, they could have been different. It's just my overall takeaway. Like, I understood why they did Kuminga and Moody at the time, but imagine they walked away with Jalen Johnson and Wiggins instead, what that roster might have looked like and what type of success they might have had. Really interesting thought, but love the pick, Corey.
Yeah. So let's run through the picks that we made to end the show. Detroit stayed chalk, took Cade Cunningham with the first pick. Houston pivoted, shake things up, took Evan Mobley with the second pick. Cleveland took Alperen Şengün with the third pick. Toronto gets Franz Wagner at number 4. Orlando takes Trey Murphy at number 5. Oklahoma City takes Austin Reeves at number 6. The Golden State Warriors take Jalen Johnson at number 7. Orlando still lands Jalen Suggs, this time at pick 8. Sacramento takes Scottie Barnes at pick 9. The Memphis Grizzlies take Herb Jones at pick 10. The Charlotte Hornets select Jalen Green at pick 11. The San Antonio Spurs land Josh Giddey at number 12. The Indiana Pacers select Quentin Grimes at 13. And to end the lottery, the Golden State Warriors take Aaron Wiggins at 14. Who was close to landing in this redraft on your board that we did not select?
Ooh, okay. little hometown bias, but Miles McBride.
Miles McBride.
Yeah, I had him high up.
Look at his impact metrics. I know.
Love him. Love him as a Knick fan. Davion Mitchell, obviously. Kuminga right there. Moody right there. Kispert right there. Even a guy like Isaiah Jackson, I had him close. Biggest one for me here at the tail end, Santi Aldama. I think he's had a really nice career for where he was taken. And at the time when he was taken, I was kind of like, who the hell is that?
I got a text from a very prominent basketball mind.
Okay.
Who just sent me a text on draft night. Santi Aldama, question mark.
Your guy, Corey, Ayo Dosunmu.
Yeah.
Jared Butler, I'm still a believer. I hope things work out for him. We loved him in that draft, Corey. Jericho Sims, blah. But main guy for me, De'Ron Sharp. Yeah. Yeah. The main guy who's right there was Miles McBride. And last thing I want to say, Corey, if you go back in time, the two players that we were the hardest on in terms of their breakdowns were Keon Johnson and Zaire Williams.
Yeah.
The comedy of both of those guys ending up as Brooklyn Nets has given me life.
I think Keon has been okay.
No, he has been. He has been. But
and Zaire got signed to a, 2-year deal, so he's still, getting contracts and, still developing. So we hope that he's a developmental project. You know who we didn't take? Who we were also pretty high on in the draft. And I don't know if we were right or wrong about him. Cam Thomas.
Yeah.
Who's betting on himself, taking the qualifying offer. Not a lot of players have done that in restricted free agency. I want to say Ben Gordon did it. Mm. Maybe he was the last one.
Mm.
Before he ultimately signed with Detroit. I could be wrong on that. That's just off the top of the dome. But we thought that Cam had a special skill to score.
Yeah.
And we were right.
We did. We were right. We were right. You know, one last...
The value on what that was worth, maybe we were wrong about.
One last guy, Corey, that I liked a lot that didn't work out, Isaiah Todd.
Yeah, he was interesting. Again, what would he look like maybe with college development?
Yeah. Yeah. Corey, a guy that we both really like, but you were higher on than me. We were right there. Josh Christopher.
Yeah. I love Josh Christopher, man. Yeah.
I still like him. I'm still hoping for some, I don't know.
I think he's just a little, a little small height wise. He was strong, athletic.
Tough one.
But tough one. The game has evolved even since then. 0.5 basketball, high field players are valued more, but I loved Josh Christopher's game. I really thought offensively he did some fun stuff. And I thought even defensively he did some fun things.
Yeah.
But I think just that can you be a sound, quick decision maker? Now maybe we have a different eval on him from where we were at. Because we were very green as far as evaluating all of these guys. I mean, we were having to scour the internet to watch these guys. We didn't have access to Synergy or anything like that. We were finding film on YouTube and watching it like that, because it was available then, and it was hard, but that's how we did it. And luckily we now are have a much easier time watching these guys, but we made with it what we could, and we made some mistakes and we had some hits, and that's the way the draft goes, right? For every hit that you can brag about, there's a miss right there. For every Shengun, there's a Josh Christopher, So that's our 2021 redraft. Fun episode. Yeah, I like looking back. This was a fun episode. This was our first full draft cycle, and we're not even full draft cycle together, but this was, our first draft cycle doing our pod together in that format. And, I think that we've evolved and gotten better as scouts, but the goal is to keep getting even better and keep doing more. And thank you for everybody for watching and tuning in, both live on YouTube or on your podcast feed. We appreciate you guys and all your support. There's a lot of places where you can find us this year. You're going to be able to find us right here on the No Ceilings NBA Draft Show, on the No Ceilings NBA feeds, whether that's podcast or YouTube. You're going to be able to find us over on the Locked On Network Monday through Friday, the Locked On NBA Draft Show with No Ceilings. And then you're also going to find us on the Field of 68 for a podcast called The Ground Floor with No Ceilings that we're excited about. So we're all over this year, and we appreciate everyone's support because we couldn't have done it without you. We're so excited to move forward. We looked back in the past for this episode. We're excited to keep looking forward to the 2026 class, and we're excited that you're going to do it with us. So I'm Corey. He's Albert. Thank you for rocking with us. We're out. Peace.
Peace.